Good morning, welcome back to Nachyomi. Today we're going to be focusing on Yechezkel, Perek Gimel, the third chapter of Sefer Yechezkel. And we're now, after he has been initiated, after he's been told to write this Megillah, we now hear a little bit about the more practical aspects of Yechezkel's mission. We're going to hear a little bit more about his audience and already starting to see some of his demonstrating prophecies, the actual prophecies that he lives by, not just says. So here we go. At the beginning of the Perek, it's clearly a follow-on from the end of Perek Beis, where he is actually told to eat this Megillah. Remember, he has this scroll, which is made up of these writings, these curious writings that at the end of the previous Perek of Kinim Vahege Vahi, which is some sort of lamentation of sorts, or it's some ideas about theodicy, as Rashi explains it. But he's told to actually eat it now, and that's what he does. He opens up his mouth, and he swallows this Megillah, whether this means to say metaphysically or whether this means metaphorically. But the point is that he is consuming this. And Hashem says to him, Vayomer Elai Ben Adam, he says to him, son of man, ta'achel me'echo t'malel, let your innards be filled with this, ez Megillah azos asher ani nosen elecho. And he eats it up. And then Yechezkel comments, v'atehi b'fi k'dvash l'mosak. And he says it actually tasted really good. It was like sweet honey. Why do we need to know that? So the Malbim points out that there's two aspects of eating. One aspect of eating is tasting, and the other one is digestion. It's interesting that many people sacrifice digestion for taste. Most people are interested in having sweet things, or things which taste really nice, even though they'll suffer indigestion later on. But it takes a lot of maturity to appreciate that we eat for the sake of digestion and health, as how the food is actually distributed in the body, rather than just simply the 2 seconds that it's on our palate. But what Hashem was saying to him is that the mission of over here is to absorb these ideas and to amalgamate them into your actual system. And Yechezkel is saying that when I had this, it was sweet for me. So not only was it good for my digestive tract, not only is it was part of who and what I am, but the Torah that you're teaching me is something which is sweet to me as well. That's how he responds. Now, after absorbing this Megillah, after absorbing the message of this Megillah, we now move into the next step, which is his mission to the Bnei HaGolah. So in this next section, which is moving from Pasuk Dalad through to Zion, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sets him up, tells Yechezkel what he's going to be doing. And he says in a number of repetitive sentences, or seemingly repetitive sentences, Ki loy el am im keitz afav, ki de loshana tashuloach. You're not sent to people who are, you know, different languages and a hard language. Rather, el beis Israel, you're sent to Israel. Loy am im rabim im keitz afav, ki de loshan, ashaloy tishma direhem, im loy ashal alehem shalachticha, hema yishmu alecha. He's saying, you're going to go to speak to Bnei Israel, which means, as the Mitzudas points out, is that you are being sent to people who you're not going to have trouble speaking to. You know their culture, you know their background, you know their dialect, you know how they speak. You're not going to have to change what you're saying in order to speak to you. But understand that they're also very stubborn people. Some things haven't changed necessarily. And the Jews are going to give you a difficult time. They're not going to listen to you so easily. That being the case, understand, you don't need to change your cadence, but you need to be aware of that. But don't fear from them, because as he said in the previous parak, you need to give over this message. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends him specifically to his first destination. He says, "Aleich bo el agola," go to the diaspora. Clearly, the audience over here is not the nation of Israel in Israel. They've got Yirmiyahu speaking to them currently. You're going to go to the Gola, and you're going to speak to them. So what happens? Yechezkel describes Vatisoeni ruach voeshma acharai kol rash gadol, and this wind lifted me, and I hear behind me this loud noise which says emits baruch kavod Hashem imkomo. This is part of our liturgy. This is part of our davening. Blessed be Hashem, the glory of Hashem from his place. And then Yechezkel hears the sounds of the wings of these chayos, which we saw in the first chapter, the sounds of the wings of these angels, which are sort of kissing one another, so touching each other, and the idea of the ofanim, these lower angels moving below them in loud sound as they move. And this wind brings him to a certain place. Where is this place? It's a place called Tel Aviv, which is on the Nahar Kavar, on the Kabar River. And he sits there for 7 days before releasing this prophecy to the people there. So he's about to impart this prophecy. So what's really going on? So if you actually look, this place called Tel Aviv, which is obviously the biblical precedent to the city, the major metropolis in Israel today, is Tel Aviv. The spring mound, the hill of spring, was taken from here, of course. But this seems to be, interestingly enough, a diaspora city which the Jews were actually exiled to. And just in the last few decades, there's been a lot of cuneiform which has been discovered in the Persian Gulf War. A lot of interesting archaeological finds were managed to be taken out of the Iraq area, which describe the Jews who lived at this time in this particular area. So he's obviously speaking to a major bastion of Jewish settlement at the time. And this is his audience right now. Why is he hearing this voice? What's this whole business with the voice? So it sounds like, as we saw in the first parak, he is witnessing, so to speak, all the angels beneath the chariot, which are the chariots for the throne, the divine throne. And as it moves and it takes him with it, he's hearing the movement of the throne. Obviously, symbolically, we should be aware of the fact that the Kodesh HaKadosh, the innermost sanctum of the Beis HaMikdash, and earlier on the Mishkan, is constructed in a similar way, where you have the angels' wings, which form a canopy over the Aron and the Torah. So to speak, these angels' wings are forming this canopy as they move over sort of the bridge between heaven and earth. Why is he hearing this voice? So the Malbim points out that Haruach Nosa Osi Mimorom Mimakom Ma'amadi V'Shamati Ma'achorai Kol Rash Gadol. Why? Because what Yechezkel's learning over here is that even though the Shechina is moving, even though the Shechina is moving from place to place, the Kavod Hashem, the honor of Hashem, is always in the place that he's at. Which means that even though it may be leaving the Kodesh HaKadoshim, even though it may be leaving the sanctum of the Beis HaMikdash, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is still found in the place that he's at. The Shechina might be begalusa, it may be in exile, but it's still there. And he waits 7 days after this experience of being transported to the Bnei Agola, to this place Tel Aviv, and he's now going to report his prophecy. So here's what it is. Hashem now tells him, this is what your job is. Tzofeh nesaticha leveis Israel. I'm making you a tzofeh, a sentinel, a watch guard to all of Israel. And he explains to him that, you know what, when you say to a rasha, when you tell a bad person you're going to die, then it's going to be his responsibility when he doesn't listen. Right, but if you don't tell him, then it's going to be your responsibility, the sentinel, for not having told him. Which means to say that what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, and he does frames it in the opposite direction as well, that when a person's given a warning, then the sentinel's done his job, and if the person doesn't listen, it's the person's responsibility. If the sentinel does not give the message, then the people don't know. They can always say, "Well, I didn't know, I didn't expect, I wasn't thinking." So your job is the tzofeh. It is fascinating if you want to actually contrast this to a pasuk in the 33rd perek, Perek Lamagil, pasuk Vav in Yechezkel. There's actually a greater and deeper meaning to this. He presents a story in one pasuk there, and it goes as follows: Vatzofer, a sentinel or watch guard, ki yireh es acherev ba'ah. Let's say the watch guard sees the sword coming. So his responsibility is the night shift. He's sitting in the tower. He's watching the city, and he sees that there's a group of pillagers coming to the village. V'loik toka b'shofar, and he doesn't sound the alarm. He doesn't blow the horn. V'am lo nizar v'tavo acher v'tikach mehem nefesh. And what happens is that they come and they kill somebody from the city. Hu ba'avonoi nilkach v'damoi miyad atzofer edrosh. Ultimately, the person who died in that raid deserved to die, because there is a cheshbon in Hashem's world. But the tzofer, the sentinel who didn't raise the alarm, will be held guilty in this. Meaning, there's a divine plan, and then there's the humans involved in it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying here as well, tzofer nesaticha leveis Yisrael, you are the sentinel, you're the watch guard. Even if you don't do your job, the end plan is still locked in. But you will be held responsible if you don't do your job. That's what you need to be doing. It gives a little bit of context of what's been going on over here. And finally, this parak concludes Apostle Chof Beis, till the very end of the parak in Chof Zayin, where he's told his first prophecy that he's supposed to do. He comes to this place, he's in this place where he now moves to a place called the Bika, the valley, and he's now told in this valley that he's going to have to lock himself into his house and tie himself up with ropes. You're not going to go out, you're not going to speak to people, I'm going to make your tongue cleave to its palate, you're going to be completely mute to these people. And therefore, and afterwards, then you're going to speak. And then you're going to say, Ko amar Hashem Elokim, Hashomer Yishma, Vachadal Yechdal, Ki Beis Meri Hemo. And those who are going to listen are going to listen, those who are not going to. Why is this second level of prophecy happening in a valley? So a number of the Mephoshim say it's because the valley is a place of water, and for Nevoah to exist in Chutzaritz, it needs to either be by the Nar Kvar, by the river, or by the valley. It's an aspect of purity. Whereas other Mephoshim say, on a more pragmatic level, the valley is a place which is not a place necessarily of settlement, where people have not yet impurified it with Avodah Zarah. They usually do it on the hills. So this is a place where Hashem can appear to Yechezkel in the Golah. Why is it being tied up? What's the whole business of this? So the Malbim says this is this is going to relate later on to next Perek, where he's going to lie on his side for a number of days. It's a demonstration of his prophecy. Whereas the Mitzvah says no, he's like under house arrest. It doesn't mean that he's actually tied up with ropes, but being under house arrest is like being tied up by ropes. What is the meaning and the message of this being housebound? So Rashi says it's to demonstrate that Bnei Yisrael are not fitting for tshuva. Meaning to say, you don't deserve the prophet who needs to speak to you, which is a little ironic because he's being told that he needs to tell them, otherwise that he's going to suffer as the sentinel. But at the same time, he's giving over the message that maybe you don't deserve the message. Maybe you don't deserve the prophet to tell you. And finally, just the last thought, which is the Rinas Yitzchak Rav Sirotskin on Tanakh says that maybe there's an image over here of the Hiskir HaKohen Esanega. We know that the Kohen locks up a plague for a number of days, for 7 days. We saw the number 7 appear earlier in this parak, that you wait for 7 days to see that is the plague going up or going down? Is it spreading or is it desisting? And perhaps over here, he's locking himself. He is the Kohen. He's locking himself, the Nega in the house, perhaps to say that there's still time that change could be effected. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.